You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 15th of November 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, yesterday was Remembrance Sunday and we will be talking about that in Real Britannia later on today. Patriotic Alternative were out and about around the country laying wreaths, making speeches and paying their respects to the fallen. Unfortunately, one group of nationalists faced some resistance against this. Their wreath was actually taken by the police, and some of them thought that they were actually going to be arrested. I mean, this is really, really quite disgraceful. Removing somebody's wreath, a completely unoffensive wreath that had been placed at a war memorial out of respect for our fallen soldiers. Quite what is offensive about that, I don't know. I suspect we will be hearing more about that. But as I say, we will be concentrating on remembering the fallen in Real Britannia later on today. Also yesterday, a bomb went off. And we were actually very lucky that it didn't kill a lot of people. A hero taxi driver thwarted a Remembrance Day bomb tragedy by trapping a suspected terrorist in his cab. I mean, this man is absolutely fantastic, an absolute genuine hero here. It's great to see that he is being talked up in this way by the newspapers this morning. Brave Dave Perry leapt from the car and locked the doors as the device exploded at Liverpool Women's Hospital yesterday, killing only the male passenger who carried the bomb. Now imagine if that had gone off in that hospital. It's all pregnant women that have just given birth. I mean, you could not imagine a worse place for a bomb to go off. Last night, David was stable in hospital with burns and shrapnel injuries, including damage to his ear. Billy Darwin was among those paying tribute last night, posting online, David Perry, the Liverpool hero. He added, David nearly paid the ultimate price to save others, apparently not giving anything a second thought, besides making sure he went above and beyond to keep the people of our city safe. And I mean, he could have just run, but he didn't. He jumped out and he turned back and he made sure that the car was locked and the suicide bomber couldn't get out. And he was also extremely observant to have worked out what was going on. Stephen Thomas added, the driver is my mate and spotted the passenger acting suspiciously, so he jumped out the car. He went on, this guy blew himself up, but my friend is okay. He sustained a few injuries, burns, burst eardrums, and some shrapnel, but he's okay. And I pray to God that he hasn't lost his hearing from this. You don't really sort of think about these things, but if you're close to where one of these bombs goes off, you could end up losing your hearing as well as getting all sorts of bloody injuries as well across your body and being maimed, all sorts. I mean, what could have happened if this guy hadn't worked out, this taxi driver hadn't worked out what is going on is unthinkable. Jay Keats responded, your mate is a hero, locking the car too. Well done, that man. However, cabbie Kev Cuthbertson posted, it's my mate who got blown up. He's in a bad, bad way. He's a fellow driver on Delta. He's had his ear sewn back on, got burns and shrapnel wounds and other pretty serious injuries. He is a hero. When he noticed the bomb, he locked the scumbag in the car, but took the brunt of the blast. Last night, an online fundraising page was set up to help David. Let's hope he gets lots of donations for that. The organizer wrote, his quick thinking possibly saved a lot of lives. Not possibly. I think his quick thinking did save a hell of a lot of lives. A lot of children's lives, a lot of babies' lives. And it reminds me of the Manchester bomb that went off and killed and maimed lots of children. This would have taken out lots of babies. The car blew up in Liverpool at 10:59 a.m., killing its suspicious-looking passenger as the country prepared to mark the fallen at 11 a.m. So this was timed to go off at the 1 minute's silence for our fallen soldiers. Pals of the injured taxi driver, who was in a stable condition last night, said he acted courageously to thwart a bombing of the hospital where 30 babies are born each day. Three men, aged 21, 26 and 29, were later arrested elsewhere in the city under the Terrorism Act. And because it was a suicide bomb, I think we can pretty safely say that this was Islamic terrorism that was going on here. But of course, don't forget, it's the far right that are the fastest growing terror threat in Britain, and over half of Prevent's resources are now directed at the so-called far right. The blast occurred close to the Liverpool Cathedral, which was hosting one of the country's largest Remembrance Day services. With more than 2,000 people, it is less than a mile from the hospital. And it looks like that was the original target for the bomb. One source said Mr. Perry grew suspicious after the passenger asked him to drive to the cathedral, but then changed his mind. The source told the Daily Mail the roads leading to the cathedral were blocked, and the man asked Mr. Perry to stop at Liverpool Women's Hospital instead. I mean, what would be your reason for that? You're heading to the cathedral and you suddenly decide, no, I think I'd rather go to the hospital. They told the paper the man changed his mind and asked to go to the city centre instead, but when they were going past the women's hospital, he said to pull in there. And that must have been what really tipped the driver off. It was just before 11 a.m. David noticed the man had some kind of light attached to his clothing and was messing around with it, and it really didn't look right at all. So it was this change in direction and what the guy looked like. I guess they're being careful to say that he wasn't of Middle Eastern appearance or anything like that to tip people off that he was a jihadi. Cops are exploring a theory the detonator in a device exploded whilst the main charge did not. Again, that we're just incredibly lucky here that it just blew up the car and blew him up. Last night, security expert Will Geddes of International Corporate Protection suggested that Islamic State could be behind the blast because of, one, the target. Islamic State have targeted several hospitals and medical facilities in Afghanistan recently. Number two, the timing, around 11 a.m. on Remembrance Sunday as the nation honoured its war dead. And number three, the cause. Mr. Geddes suspects it was a vehicle-borne improvised explosive device, which is also associated with the fanatics. So probably Islamic State. Graphic pictures and videos captured the private hire taxi with smoke and flames billowing from it near the main entrance to Liverpool Women's Hospital as horrified staff and patients looked on. Detectives had not last night declared the blast a terrorist attack. Security sources said all options are on the table as a major investigation began. I'm surprised they haven't said that this was a terrorist attack. I mean, it's a suicide bomb that's gone off, and that does fit the modus operandi for Islamic terrorism. I'm not sure of any other groups or people that would set off a suicide bomb. Spooks were urgently trying to find out the identity of the dead passenger to establish if he had appeared on any intelligence-led lists of terror suspects, and we usually find out that, yes, they were on a list and they were being watched. That's normally what we find out when this sort of thing happens. They're being watched, but that doesn't actually manage to prevent them from carrying out these horrific attacks. Sources said that the next 24 hours would be critical, with experienced anti-terror detectives from Scotland Yard also being asked to lend their expertise. And we have to be careful not to take out our anger on the Muslim community for this. And the reason for that is because the people behind this are our own governments, who instituted multiculturalism, instituted diversity, told us diversity was a strength, imported people that were not of our ethnicity from the Near East, from the Far East. And once those people were here, our government then went and bombed their families. Literally bombed their families. So, of course, a number of them are going to have a grievance against Britain and against the British. And if our government had not imported these people in any size, they would not be able to carry out terror attacks against us. You only have to look at Poland, who have never once had an Islamic terror attack, to see that if Britain was like Poland and had not imported people from the Near East and the Far East, this terror attack would not have been able to happen. So don't blame the Muslims for this. We can blame the individual that carried out this attack and wanted to carry out this attack. But the real source of this, the real reason why this happened, is because of our own government's policies. And on top of that, this, as well as happening on Remembrance Sunday when we were remembering our war dead, it was also on the same date of the Paris terror attacks, the worst Islamic terror attacks of the last 10 years, I guess. The Paris terror attacks were a brutal series of coordinated strikes which shocked the world. ISIS terrorists carried out suicide bombings and several mass shootings across the city and its northern suburb Saint-Denis on November the 13th, 2015. So bearing in mind the date, yesterday was November the 14th, you would imagine that Britain would be on high alert for another terror attack to be occurring on the same date, basically. The first of the attacks happened at 9:20 p.m. at the Stade de France, where France were playing Germany in an international football-friendly match. Two other suicide bombers wearing identical suicide vests detonated them outside the stadium shortly afterwards. Meanwhile, further into the centre of Paris, gunmen stormed cafes and restaurants. The first shooting was reported at Le Carillon Bar in the city's 10th arrondissement. Then witnesses said a man crossed the road, Rue Alibert, and carried out another shooting at Le Petit Cambodge restaurant. A few streets south, two gunmen then attacked diners in front of the Café Bonne Bière and La Casa Nostra pizzeria. After that, the perpetrators, who travelled from location to location in a black Seat car, moved a few streets further south, attacking La Bella Equipe bar in the 11th arrondissement. Then, at 9:40 p.m, suicide bomber Brahim Abdul Salam entered a cafe on the nearby Boulevard Voltaire and placed an order before detonating his vest. Around the same time, a mass shooting and hostage situation took place at the Bataclan Theatre. And that was the really horrific one. Absolutely terrifying what happened there with the fans of the band that were just trying to get out of the theatre, that were sort of hanging on from the windows and dropping to the floor. There were around 1,500 audience members in the venue watching a sold-out concert by Californian rock band Eagles of Death Metal. And of course, the same as we're told over here in Britain, that the far right, the fastest growing terror threat. We have similar things going on in France, where they've outlawed Generation Identitaire, and they have outlawed a criticism of Islam, they may be changing. I mean, Macron did appear to be standing up a little bit for free speech when that teacher, Samuel Paty, when he was beheaded earlier this year. So maybe things are changing in France. I don't know. But it doesn't take away from the fact that this attack happened there, and I'd have lost count of the number of Islamic terror attacks that have taken place in France. France has the most number of terror attacks in the whole of Europe, and just by a coincidence, it also has the highest number of Muslims in the whole of Europe. And of course, again, the reason why this attack was able to take place is because of France's immigration policy, which is put in place by France's politicians. Around an hour after the concert began, gunmen entered the building and opened fire on the crowd from the mezzanine, which some audience members initially thought was pyrotechnics. At around 10 p.m, the attackers took as many as 100 music fans hostage, and witnesses heard the gunmen mention Syria. At around 12:20 a.m, top security forces entered the hall. The siege came to an end when police shot one gunman, causing his suicide belt to blow up before the other two attackers detonated theirs. The attackers were identified as Omar Ismail Mustafai, 29, Sami Anamur, 28, and Fouay Mohamed Agad, 23. Overall, 7 of the 9 perpetrators were killed during the attacks or in subsequent police raids. And this is the real problem with this. What we're up against here is a people that are not afraid to die. In fact, dying is part of their plan. I mean, how do you hold any kind of retributive threat over an enemy which is prepared to kill itself just to kill you, that thinks that if they manage to blow a load of non-Muslims up, that they're actually going to go to heaven in doing so? There is nothing really that you can do to scare them off from actually carrying out these attacks. The only real solution to this that would prevent them from occurring would be to do away with multiculturalism. Do away with multiculturalism, have segregated communities, and you would no longer be able to have Islamic terrorism. If Islamic extremists wish to carry out Islamic terrorism, they would only be able to carry it out on their own people, which would be much more difficult for them to do, in the same way that it is much more difficult for you to harm yourself than it is to harm somebody else, or much more difficult for you to harm your own family than it is to harm somebody else. It's very difficult to inflict an injury upon yourself, because you know that it's going to be hurting you. And it's the same with your extended kinship group. It's much more difficult to carry out crimes against your own people than it is to carry out crimes against another people. So it wouldn't just lower the number of terror attacks that would be able to happen, it would also lower the number of crimes that were able to happen if we had segregated communities, which would be better for all ethnicities involved. It wouldn't just be better for white people, it would also be better for black people, it would be better for Muslims. And Muslims want to live in Muslim countries that have Sharia law. And if they can't live in Muslim countries, they want to live in Muslim areas that have Sharia law. I mean, it's just common sense that people want to live amongst their own people. I don't believe I'm saying anything hateful in pointing this out, that this is the common sense solution to this problem. And the cause of the problem, the source of the problem, is multiculturalism itself. You have different peoples with different cultures, and you have a conflict of interests here. You have Britain or France that wish to have regime change in Syria or regime change in Libya, and then you have a certain part of the Muslim community that don't want that. They want Sharia law in Libya, they want Sharia law in Syria, or they've got family members that lived in Iraq and that were bombed by Britain, and they have a legitimate grudge against Britain for this. And yet they're living in in our country because our government imported them. Brahim's brother, Salah Abdi Salam, was captured by police after an extensive manhunt lasting 126 days. And this was absolutely incredible when this went on. I mean, his picture was everywhere. Everybody knew what he looked like. And yet he was able to get away without being picked up for 126 days. Why was that? Well, the reason was because he was in Molenbeek in Belgium, which has more Muslims in it than anywhere else in Belgium. And he wasn't hiding. He was just walking about in plain sight. But the Muslims there were not going to call up the police and say, well, we have this guy that you are looking for here, because their loyalty was to this guy that was part of their religion. And the loyalty to this, to their religious brethren comes above their loyalty to the country that they are living in. And I'm not saying that that's a terrible thing. I mean, you should be loyal to your religion. You should be loyal to your ethnicity. Again, this is the conflict of interests that diversity brings. We're told that as soon as somebody sets foot on our soil, they become a citizen of that country, and their loyalty is to that country. But then when family loyalties come in, get in the way of that, obviously the family loyalty is going to be stronger. So the Molenbeek Muslims, their loyalty was to this other Muslim, which is why it took 126 days for the Belgian police to actually track him down. The only other living suspect, Mohamed Abrini, remains in custody after he was charged in connection with the Paris attacks in January 2017, and the attacks themselves claimed the lives of 130 people, injuring 352 others. Now, yesterday I didn't hear anything about these people that died in the Bataclan, and obviously we should be talking about our soldiers that died in the war, but this happened on the same date. We should be remembering this as well, and just how horrific this was. We cannot allow this to be forgotten, and that's the reason why I'm talking about this now. I'm not talking about it because I want to incite hate against Muslims. As I've pointed out already, the source of this lies in the government policy of multiculturalism, because this would not be able to happen if we didn't have multiculturalism. But we have to remember what actually went on here, because it was absolutely horrific, and it was also covered up at the time. The Islamic State terrorists who attacked the Bataclan Theatre in Paris not only killed scores of innocents, they also gouged out the eyes and sliced up the genitals of some of the victims, according to testimony in a disturbing French report. Some victims' bodies from the second floor of the theatre had been beheaded, eviscerated, and otherwise mutilated, according to two second-hand accounts reported to a parliamentary commission set up to investigate the attack. And remember, the Muslims in Molenbeek, they hid the guy that was responsible for this. Their loyalty to their group was stronger than condemnation of somebody for doing something like this, because he was a part of their group. And as white people, we don't understand that anymore, because we don't have loyalty to our own group anymore. We will hand up our people for extradition treaties to other countries. And because we don't have loyalty to our own group, we can't imagine that any of these other people groups have loyalty to their group. But they do. They do have loyalty to their people group, because they understand that it's part of their extended family. And if anybody's going to deal with them, it's going to be them that deal with them. And in a way, that's the right way to really do things, I think. Criminals should be dealt with by members of their own group. This is why we get these problems where you get black people that are in court and they will claim that it's a racist court and that they're being victimized because they're black. And it's because they're being judged by somebody who is white. And Muslims will claim that they're being victimized if they're being judged by a Christian. They will say, well, you've got no right to judge me. I should be judged by other Muslims. And in a way, they're right, because you cannot imagine what it is like to live in another man's shoes. If you are whatever ethnicity you are, you can't imagine what it is like to be another ethnicity. You don't understand their culture. You don't understand their motives. You don't understand their thinking. And if we didn't have diversity, if we had people living within their own communities, they would only be judged by their own community. And that, I think, would be a much more just way of doing things. But for the sake of these people, we should remember what was actually done to them, because it was absolutely horrific. The investigation's chair, conservative lawmaker George A. Fenech, complained to the commission that details of the mutilations had been kept from families and the press, according to an online transcript. He also said he had heard of one especially grievous account. The father of one victim had told him that his son had been disemboweled and castrated with his testicles found in his mouth. They had cut off his testicles, Fenech said, during testimony. I mean, this is the hatred that is there. This is the hatred that has been stoked up by our governments bombing these Islamic countries. They hate us so much, and not all of them, but a certain portion of them hate us so much that they would disembowel and castrate innocent members of our people group in revenge. French law enforcement officials, who also testified for investigators, insisted, meanwhile, that there was no evidence that victim injuries were caused by anything other than gunfire and shrapnel. One official, Michael Cadeau, the prefect of police in Paris, stressed that no knives were recovered from the scene. Some of the bodies found at the Bataclan were extremely mutilated by the explosions and weapons, to the point that it was sometimes difficult to reconstruct the dismembered bodies, said investigator Christian Saint. But Fenech stood by his account. Someone put his testicles in his mouth, he said. The torture allegations surfaced in March 2017 during some 200 hours of testimony before an investigative committee of the French National Assembly. The bodies have not been shown to the families because there are people who are decapitated, people who are bloated, and people who have been disemboweled, one police witness told officials, according to the transcript. When Fenech asked if the mutilations would have been videotaped by the terrorists, the witness answered, "It seems to me. There are people decapitated, swollen, and disemboweled. There are signs of sexual acts committed against women and knife cuts to genitals. If I am not mistaken, some of the eyes of certain people have been removed," the witness said. The witness was later asked by Fenech how he had come to learn of the acts of barbarism. He answered that he himself had only witnessed bodies struck by bullets on the ground floor, but he learned the gruesome details from another investigator, whom he found vomiting and crying after seeing the carnage upstairs, he told investigators. After the assault, we were with our colleagues at the Saint-Pierre-Amelot corridor when I saw an investigator leaving in tears who was just about to throw up, the police witness said. And absolutely horrific what went on there. Those poor music fans going to a concert to have that happen, and then to have nobody mention it yesterday on the anniversary of it, nobody talk about it in the mainstream, nobody saying what an awful thing this was that happened, and we should be watching out just in case there is another terror attack. And of course there was this other terror attack here in Britain, and thankfully it was thwarted. It reminds me of what Sadiq Khan said. I mean, he said that terrorism is now just part and parcel of living in a big city. Well, it's not part and parcel of living in a big city in Poland. It's not part and parcel of living in a big city in Iceland. It's only part and parcel of living in multicultural cities. And the only reason our cities are now multicultural is because of our government's own policies. And it's those policies that need to be changed if we are to prevent this. I mean, sending prevent after the so-called far right isn't going to prevent this. Stopping people from being able to talk about it with the Public Order Act and speech laws, that isn't going to prevent this. from happening. The only way to stop, to properly and finally stop this from happening, is to have an end to the policy of multiculturalism. Well, thank you very much for listening. I hope you don't have nightmares after today's episode. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.